Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
If you're constantly on the hunt for a good deal, then you need Rakuten. Rakuten is the smartest way to save money when you shop because members get cash back at over 3,500 stores across every category, including fashion, beauty, electronics, home essentials, traveling, dining, and more. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while you're doing it? It's a no-brainer. Get the Rakuten app now and join the 17 million members who are already saving. Cashback rates change daily. See Rakuten.com for details. That's Rakuten. Your cashback really adds up.
Well, hey there, friend. Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast. Why am I doing this character from the top? Hey, Nerdist Podcast Live, probably coming to a city near you. Here are a bunch of live dates where Matt, Joan, and I are going to be appearing in the coming months. Obviously, November 30th, we will be in Northampton, Massachusetts at Iron Horse. January 6th at 9:30 Club in D.C. And here's the new dates, just announced, as in right now, just announced. March 2nd, Boulder, Colorado at the Boulder Theater. March 3rd, stateside at the Paramount in Austin, Texas. March 23rd, Philadelphia, the Trocadero. March 24th, the Variety Theater in Atlanta. April 12th, Madison, Wisconsin at the Majestic. April 13th, the Vic in Chicago, which I believe is during C2E2, nerds. Information and ticket sales and all of that good stuff will be at Nerdist.com. As soon as we get the tickets on sale, which I believe will be later this week. And if you're hearing this after this week, then those tickets are on sale. And if you're hearing the show next year, boy, the shows were great! Enough of my blabbity chats, let's get into this episode because it is with, I'm gonna say, one of the best comics working today. The Nerdist Podcast, episode number 141, with Dave Attell. Shit, yeah!
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I've not seen Gigolos yet, but I do like, I do think there's a funny trend in television now where they have a fictional show,
yeah,
and then they do the reality version. Like they did that with L Word, and then it was like the real L Word,
which is like that was a working title that made it to air.
I thought you were going to rename this. it's already on now.
The real
Dave Attell is here.
Yay.
In our studio.
He's got a set list.
By the way, thanks for talking about every show on Showtime but mine. That was great. No, glad to be here, guys. How's everybody out there in Nerdville?
I feel like they're pretty good.
Nerdton.
Yeah?
They're pretty good.
Well, this is like a nerd holiday. It's Halloween, or I don't know when this is going to air, but it's definitely some kind of huge, you know.
It is Halloween today.
Right?
There's a lot of steampunking going on right now.
It's the original cosplay day.
It really is.
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of people, although they do celebrate Halloween, it's sort of like my father with drinking, where he was like, no, I don't really tear it up on New Year's Eve, because that's amateur night.
Yeah,
it is.
That's true.
It is. There's more cops out on Halloween. That's why I kind of keep it clean.
Well, I live in New York. Sorry if it's back to me for a second.
No, this is your show today, so it's all about you.
No, I live in New York, so you know they have that huge parade. Do you guys have that here in LA?
We have the West Hollywood Parade. Yeah.
Really?
Which
is what it's called? Really?
Yeah. that's the parade where one year I saw a guy dressed as Superman, and then there was a hole cut out of his briefs, and then his dick was out, also dressed up as Superman.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So that's the kind of thing you see at the thing you see at the West Hollywood Parade. What's it like in New York?
Oh, filthier and dirtier than that, but probably not as much now because everyone's so broke.
Right, right.
You know, people are sharing a costume. You know,
they have to draw on the dick costumes.
Yes,
instead of
we can curse on this.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh yeah, this isn't radio. It's a podcast.
Here we go.
You can now buy your costumes at Comics, which is no longer a place.
That's true.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Those Halloween places swoop in and rent them out for a month. Yeah.
Oh, they turned it into a Halloween store?
Yeah.
We went. I loved Comics. Did you perform at Comics a lot?
The comedy club?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I have to say that like we all kind of like poo-pooed that place. Like, you know, who would build a club over here? And like, you know, it was like that weird area of New
over
York.
Over in Chelsea, yeah.
Dance clubs and like the Apple Store, that weird, you know, it's like a comedy club. But now I'm like, I miss it because that was a cool space. So
it was weird that
really
they had the club, though, in the front. Like it turned into like a nightclub in the front of the store. Yeah. Which was like, I always thought was odd.
It was like a mullet of entertainment. Party in the back, club in the front.
Every once in a while, that sort of happens in the comedy club business where someone goes, and it's usually like of someone who was a comic, and they'll go, you know what we're going to do? We're going to bring back the old glory nightclub days. We're going to serve lobster. We're going to give people nice seats and a really nice atmosphere. And I think what you find is now people want a shitty, dank club with chicken wings. Yeah, like it fucks with their head when they see a nice
room. You need low ceilings and chairs.
Finish the thought, though. Too many choices. Am I right? That's the problem with America. Too many choices.
We are, which is a form of stress now that now that we have too many choices, that actually stresses people out more than having no choices.
The only choice should be how many wings.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or like the bucket of beer. Can you do any better than that?
I love a bucket.
I want a bucket of beer.
Yeah.
Barrel. Right?
And it's smart because they make it like a buck or two cheaper.
Yeah.
Than if you get that many beers,
it's
so
a
you're
deal.
Just the asshole with a fucking bucket on the table.
I always like that. That always like a good time is about to be had. Not for the comic though, but for the audience. You know?
I went to one time a friend of mine was getting married, and we went to Vegas. Which some people do. I think it's disgusting.
In every movie.
In everything.
In every movie.
If cinema is to be believed, that's what people do. And we went to that Hofbrau house. And I don't drink. And that is the worst place to be in the world. Because they do these weird German these songs. And people are dumping steins of beer everywhere. And it just smells like the fucking bottom of a cab. It is a sad state of affairs.
It's like, you ever watch like any of the... I'm sure, you know, this is a very intelligent following of this podcast.
Oh, yes,
like, you watch the History Channel. And they,
of course.
Like they've run out of actual, like, Hitler, like, Hitlering. So now it's like the bodyguards of Hitler. Hitler's dog. So that would be like one of those, like, Germany, 1933. Everything was great. And then Hitler.
Hitler gigolos. Hitler gigolos.
Hitler gigolos.
There had to be Hitler gigolos. You want to talk about the show that you're doing on Showtime?
Well, I'll whore it up. I mean, sure. I do a show about retro porn on Showtime called Dave's Old Porn. And people always ask me, they go, is this your collection of porn? It's like, yeah, parts of it. I mean, I'm like older than every guy in this room, right? I'm like 46, which is like
a little bit older.
In wizard years, how many years is that?
That's 1,012.
1,012 years.
Yeah, 1,012 years in wizard years.
Yeah, like, you know, I'm like definitely like the head wizard in here. And, you know.
The tallest,
like,
hat.
Yeah,
no, I'm sorry.
Tall hat.
You know what, Dave? I was wrong about that. That's about 2.5 in wizard years because they live thousands of years.
I thought that was midgets.
They do. Right. They also do. They also don't.
Now we're getting into my act. What's up? It's good to see everybody pink slipped on their way out of the building here at E.
Yeah. Here's massive the news. Layoffs. Yeah. Massive layoffs.
You joke about that, but security's going.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, it's a show about retro porn. Do you guys like porn?
I mean,
you don't drink,
it.
Right?
I don't.
So then what's the next thing? Porn.
Exactly.
Porn fills the hole.
Drinking for
it?
The dick. That's really what it is.
That is a great... That's definitely a domain name. You better get on that.
Drinking
right
for
now.
The dick?
Get one of you guys on it. But I think that the retro porn, the hairy, you know, from the golden age, that's the 70s. To the early 80s.
Harry Reams,
there you go. We didn't have him on the show, but we did have, here's some names just to throw them out. Nina Hartley.
Of course.
Nice. Beautiful, great lady. Ron Jeremy, of course. He's the porn star of the millennium. So there you go.
Of course he is.
So, you know, I don't even know.
What about Christine Canyon? You have her on?
No, we didn't have her on.
Christy Canyons.
No, we didn't have her. We had Seika. Do you know who that is?
Okay. Nice.
We had Sharon Kane.
Sharon
Kane. Sharon Kane was definitely kind of like, let's think of it like SNL. She was like not Kristen Wiig, but like the second chick.
Denitra Vance. I would like to throw out to Jonas.
Always does a good job. Doesn't get enough attention.
Denitra Vance reference.
There you go. And then we had Paul Thomas, who's a director and, of course, one of the legendary Jews of porn.
What about Peter North?
No, we didn't have Peter North on because Peter's in that weird... I'd love to have him on the show, but he's in that weird, like, crossover time where it was like going from the retro, like from film
to video.
To video.
Yeah, you know, I went to I stopped by AEE this year because I happened to be at CES, and
OMG.
And well, What's it saying? What is it? What are you doing? And so I saw Peter North signing stuff there, and all the images that I have of Peter North are this guy with a blonde mullet, you know, just looks like a Midwestern guy with a fake tan. And but apparently he hasn't shot anything in a long time because he looks like a grandfather now, and it's very weird.
Well, the weird thing is, of course, being an old man is that, like, you know, I was talking about, we had like great comics on it too. You know, we had like Jim Norton, who knows porn better than me. I mean, he could find a three way, like a Indian scout, like he could just find one in a church picnic. And Bill Burr, Adam Carolla. And then the ladies, of course, Chelsea Handler, mm-hmm. Which is this week, the fetish show just ended, and whatchamacallit, Whitney Cummings,
mm-hmm.
there you go,
yep.
And Margaret Cho. So it was cool to get like both perspectives of both women watching porn and men watching porn. When's the last time you watched porn with a woman? Go ahead, guys. We'll take calls.
Earlier this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, it was just me and the lady just kind of like looking through funny porn.
Okay. There you go.
I kind of, you know, I was getting earlier this year. I got kind of nostalgic, and I was like, you know, I'm going to look up some old porn, and I went and downloaded Taboo 2.
That's a good one.
Oh, yeah, it's a great one. And like, I was just like, oh man, it was great. It was like putting on an old record. It, like, it was just comfortable. Yeah. And made me, you know, remember a lot of things.
Whatchamacallit's in that one. Tom Byron, I believe,
is in that one,
and he's also another utility player who I'd love to get on the show because he's just so great. And you know. Taboo 2, which is, I think, Raven was the lead in that,
yeah.
Correct? Yeah, she did all the taboos. And that is definitely like one of those like touchstone points.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
also like the song is great, too.
You're like a Dickopedia. All right. You got all the...
No, I don't know porn as well as like a lot... I mean, like, before the show, like, I was into retro porn, but I always thought it was too hairy. And I brought out these young porn stars like Belladonna, Christina Rose, sure. Bobby Starr. And they're like super cool. Like, I met them at the AVNs when I hosted. And like, yeah. They're just great. Great, like, cool ladies. And, like, the sex to them, they thought was, like, you know, kind of tame. Because this was before, like, you know, raw, retro.
Yeah.
This is, like, just, like, this. It was more arty than it was. But the hair was what got them. They're like, wow, look at that. This is before waxing, you know, twittering and all that kind of stuff. So
It's
a different time. It was, like, you know, like, it's kind of like what America will be like if we don't fix the economy. Just a hairy, filthy mess, you know, just sad. You know, every guy is not worked out. There's no P90X. You know, it's just regular dudes.
Just regular dudes. But you don't know. Well, you didn't know what they were shoving their wiener into. It was just like
you
a broom.
Know.
It was like a broom. Yeah. Like, I'm going to hit something. I'll get in there. You know, I'll get in there somewhere.
Either way, it does the job. And that's the beauty of this kind of porn. Because it's like you said, it's kind of like there's like hidden treasures in each little film. Yeah. You know, whether
Ecstasy Girls. That was one.
That's a good one.
You can actually watch that as a normal movie because there's some pretty funny scenes in there.
Yeah, they used to have a lot more dialogue and, of course, plot and all that kind of stuff. And what I'd love to do is, like, get some of the directors of this porn, like Bobby Chin, who did all the John Holmes, like, you know, the wild, like, he used to do, like, the Private Eye kind of guy, John Holmes. So, you know, like, get some of that, you know, like, the director point of view. But most of these people go on from, like, doing the films to directing them. So, there you go.
That's a way to, like, stay employed, I'd imagine, for them.
Well, in the porn community, yeah.
I think the first porn I ever saw was called Sex Roulette. And a friend of mine stole it from his dad. And at gunpoint, we shot his dad. We're like, fuck it, we're going to take the porn. You might as well finish the job. But it was really bizarre. There was like an old guy and a bunch of young girls, and then a black little person who wore a derby. And he would stand on phone books, and he had a huge cock, and he would have sex.
Derby dong. Yeah.
What?
No.
Could have been a person.
Yeah.
Could have been a person.
Yeah.
I don't remember his name. And he would stand him on phone books and have sex with them on tables.
I'm getting a call from him right now. I'm sorry, guys.
Derby Dong.
Derby Dong.
You guys talking about me?
Go ahead. I apologize.
No, that's all right.
So that was your first porn.
That was my very first porn. Yeah.
But that was like a definitely one of those, like, you know, come on, let's watch this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
See, now it's like so easy, you know, just like, oops, I hit the wrong button, porn, you know, there's all these filters and all that kind of stuff. So I think there was something to the whole, like, setting up the VCR and loading in the tape and, you know, locking the door. Yeah.
And something to finding it, too, just getting a hold of it when you were a kid.
I want to have a website that's just scrambled porn because I have this idea that there's a whole generation of people who get turned on by scrambled porn because that's what they had. Yeah. And they're trying to make out, like, is that a shoulder or a butt crack?
You turn it up really loud because you can kind of hear it under the, like, the hiss.
Yeah,
exactly.
We could launch that in the Middle East because they're halfway there. You know what I'm saying? There's no porn to be had over there.
Why are we still talking about this? We should be doing it.
Yeah, it's weird that the porn now, though, it's gone from just being these movies to just literally, if I'm watching porn video now, if there is music, it's weird to me now. I'm like, oh, what is it? I just need the weird, awkward sounds of an empty room.
Yeah, there was a lot of silence in these porns.
Yeah.
Screams of silence.
Screams and death rattles.
A lot of
near
broken
death
dreams
rattles.
In these. Yeah.
You remember the movie? Do you remember Meatballs?
Yeah.
So the girl, the really hot girl in Meatballs, was actually a porn star. And she was in a porn version of Alice in Wonderland, and it was like this really.
Oh, I've seen
she
that.
She was in that.
Yeah,
I had that tape.
And yeah, she was in Meatballs, and that really hot girl in Meatballs is she gets super sexed up by the Mad Hatter.
I know exactly what you're talking about now.
Yeah.
I have the Alice in Wonderland tape.
Yeah.
And it's the blonde chick, right?
She
plays Alice.
Yeah, she plays Alice.
She was one of the camp counselors or something?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yep.
There you go.
Yep.
Okay, because Pia Snow, who's in The Bad Girls.
Oh, of course, of course.
Have you seen it? Like, a lot of these girls, like Annette Haven, who, another legend that we'd love to have, like, on the show, but Annette Haven is, like, she was in Playboy, like, five times, you mm-hmm. know, like, back in the 70s, like, when it was still, like you could, I don't know, you guys are younger, so maybe, like, you find Playboy very... you know, erotic. Whoa, look at that. She's, you know, you know,
yeah,
look at her. You know, she's leaning up against a pillar. Yeah. I mean, it used to be more
look
graphic.
Look at those flowing drapes.
Yeah, exactly. You used to, you know, see some, you know, beef down there. And now there's none of that. So you got to go to Hustler or like Club or Gent.
Now, the only thing that fascinates me about Playboy now is I just flip to the birth date and go, oh, 1992, huh? All right.
Yeah
that's weird.
I remember
right after Pearl Jam's 10 came out.
Yeah.
I would buy old vintage Playboys on eBay when eBay first started. I would get like 60s and 70s Playboys because they would sell them as like vintage magazines. And
that's
like,
cool, man.
That's what I'm going to do.
So they were used?
I was 16, 17 years old, I assume.
Do you think like some of them were like they went to Nam? Do you think like some of them were like Vietnam? Some guys.
I'd like to track.
In a bunker.
Yeah. I salute them.
Oh, it's too bad you can't track those.
Oh, the history.
It's like you can enter you into the serial number of a dollar bill and find out where it's been around the country.
They'll be working on that soon. The government, you know. That's a different podcast. A conspiracy.
We're gonna shift gears here.
Why are you wearing a tinfoil hat?
Well, you know, they can read everything. But that's cool that you guys dig the, you know, like all types of porn. Because I think that, like when you said you watch it with your lady, I think that's like kind of cool that you know you get to you know that she's into it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something we do; it's something we did.
Yeah,
it kind of reminded me. Yeah, it just you know, it's like we both watch it on our own, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, you know, it's like if
like separate
one of us
beds
is gone.
In your mind.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the Ricardos? Yeah. Like the Ricardo family.
But it did remind me, there was a film festival when I was growing up, and like they had this big deal. They were going to show a 3D porn from the 70s. I can't remember what it was called, but John Holmes was in it. And it was a 3D porn, and like a bunch of us were like, oh, this is going to be hilarious. Let's go and watch it. And so we're in this... it was at the college, and like you know, we're all sitting there. Everyone's like, "Oh, this is gonna be great!" And the movie starts, and the music, and the way, and the acting. Everyone's cracking up with the weird 3D effects, and then they just started fucking. And then you're just in a room full of people.
It's weird.
Yeah. It's like you're just in a room full of people watching two people fuck, and then that's when people started to leave.
Well, that's.
I'm sorry.
No, you go. You go, please.
I was going to say, I bet you could not do that at a college now. Like, have like.
Oh no! You'd get in so much trouble.
Hardcore sex tape like that.
Yeah.
You know. They'd probably be like, you know, like, we're not going to show you this, but, you know, here's like a claymation version.
Yeah,
of it.
And it wasn't like part of the college. They just used a, like a building in the college. It was part of the International Film Festival that was going on. But yeah.
When I was in high school, a bunch of us, like maybe four of us, were like, someone's parents were at the time. We're like, this will be hilarious. We're going to rent some porns and fucking order pizza and watch porn. This is going to be so funny. And so same thing. And then the sex starts happening. It just gets really quiet, awkward.
Yeah.
And then one dude is just like, oh, I don't feel good. I think I had too much pizza. And he was like, I think I'm going to throw up.
Can you help me throw up?
Can you help my dick throw up?
Well, let me ask you this. Like, you know, there's porn and then there's like, you know, we've all been in a situation where we've had to make our own porn. Like like Blue Lagoon. Do you remember this movie?
Yeah,
sure.
Christopher Atkins.
Brooke Shields.
Yep.
Like, I remember rubbing it out. Can I say that on the air?
Yeah, you can say rubbing it out.
Rubbing it out to that. And there was really only like two like sexual scenes in it. So I think I was more rubbing it out to him than I was to her.
It's possible. Although she was pretty naked. I mean, like they were pretty clothesless.
Yes.
Until the end of the movie when you find out that they're brother and sister. Is that not the spoiler
alert?
No,
that's when I exploded.
Yeah, exactly. That's what gets you over the edge.
No, don't you know
paranormal activity, right?
What?
That's a left turn if I've ever... Yeah.
I don't think you know that right off the bat.
You know?
I don't know.
Oh.
Are they, or do you...
Am I confusing with the return to Blue Lagoon, which isn't as weird because they're just cousins?
Yeah, I don't know.
They slowly worked their way down.
We gotta separate them a little bit, you guys.
It's a very...
Were they twins? You know what? Let's be honest. Twins fuck. That's part of the relationship that twins have. I'm glad you brought
that up, because that is one of the fetishes that we have in our show, which I think is the ultimate twins.
It's so weird, right? Like twins fucking next to each other.
Or each other.
Yeah, each other. I'm so fascinated that people... You're like, guys, they're direct. They came out at the same time. They could not be more siblings.
Yeah,
they are the same, aren't they? I mean, it's like shaving in a dirty puddle of water. I mean, like, it's just you... Yeah. No?
Twins have that weird connection.
Well, it's just like...
What is that? A halogen light? Is it?
Oh, I just found it. It was sitting here. I have no idea what that is.
Is that your costume?
Yeah, I put this on.
That's his totem.
I have an idea.
He keeps that with
electricity, ladies and gentlemen.
Did you say I have an idea?
Well, they also have those... They have those, the mother-daughter... Yeah, those are really... Because, like...
But they're never really mother
You don't
daughter.
Know, though, because they're not good-looking enough to where it's... They're kind of weird-looking, so it's a good possibility.
No, I feel like the mother's always just not good-looking enough to not be related to the daughter.
No, I've seen two fucking ugly ladies.
A lot of stuff coming out on this episode.
Yeah, no. You would not watch that when you're...
No.
A window into
we watched when in high school, we did the sort of same thing that you did, Chris, and but we watched these like weirder porns. Like there was one called Impossible Penetrations.
Oh, that's cool.
Two or something like that. And I remember they had like these wraparounds that Ron Jeremy hosted.
Oh, they probably signed him for the trilogy.
There was a guy that had two penises. One guy had two penises. Yeah, don't worry about that, Dave. That's just going to happen.
Is that what you do to the new guy? The mic
falls. Prank mic.
So what were you saying?
There was a guy that had two penises.
Yes.
They both could get erect at the same time, and he fucked two chicks at the same time. And then there was another guy whose penis was so long he could insert it into his own ass.
Wow.
You know, they say
the X factor won't work. And, you know, I think the problem is they just got to find talent.
They're not looking for penetration.
No. Can I ask one question? You said he had two penises. So, like, were they both like...
it was like double
like turtle head, like, you know, like nuclear accident kind of thing? Or was like one like a tail?
No, one was not a tail. They were both in the same place. And it's sort of like a V formation.
You know, I think it'd be interesting would be to see like a hammerhead configuration where it's just like one shaft with the two heads pointing in another direction. Because what do you do with that, really? What do you do with that?
Just four guys talking cock.
This is a great episode.
four straight dudes.
Maybe our
start a new podcast.
Stop me if I'm wrong, but the cock's delicious, right, guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's yummy. Yeah,
no, I mean, come on. You know, it's not just for breakfast anymore.
Yummy fits so many things.
You totally remind me of a bit that I saw you do at the Improv once where you were saying something about that, and then you go, shut up, voice in my head. like that. It was so exciting to hear that you wanted to come on the show because I think most comics, I would say almost every comic would agree that you are the guy that comics will come in the room to watch, that you are super prolific and you have a point of view on things that is fucking mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing.
Hey, thanks, man.
Do you even know that about yourself, or are you just...
I don't think I'm that good a comic. I mean, I try. I try as... I'm not...
Why
I'm
are you not
like that?
Why do you think that?
I'll tell you why. Like, since we're all in the comedy world here, it's like there's great comics, and then there's good comics, and then there's whatever, whatever. I'm like, I used to be a good comic, and now I'm an okay comic. But then there's guys who go from good to great, and I'm not that guy because, like, I'm really just rewriting the same dick and pussy joke over and over. And, like, a lot of it has to do with just the frustration and anger of how politically correct the world is.
Right.
Of just, like, you know, like, I don't particularly want to go up there and do a joke about, you know, whatever, you know, like what you just said, like two dicks or whatever, stuff like that. But when you see the audience totally in their head, like, trying, like... Like you're on a shuffle, like YouTube shuffle, trying to blink you out of there. It's like you're just trying to shock them and grab their attention. But I think that like the guys who are great are like, you know, Louis C.K. I think is definitely like I've known him from the beginning, and he's been like always a deranged genius, you know, dirty, filthy, hilariously great written comic. And he found his voice, which is like being the family guy, and he kind of represents all dudes who are going through that. And I think that, like, great comics are guys who take it to that level of, like, an inner thing. But I appreciate, believe me, I don't want to switch places with anybody. I love the kind of comedy I do, but I'm not a great comic. I'll just say that.
Well, it's interesting to, you know, it's so funny that
George Carlin's a great comic, and what's his name? You know, Bill Hicks, and Sam Kinison, who I think is a great comic. He definitely is my more the guy that I kind of looked at now of like just pure energy and hate and fucking lust. And like, just like you feel like you're just fucking getting loads in
your
face.
He was full of chemicals too.
Yeah, he was full of chemicals. Yeah. That's the sad part about it. Because everybody always remembers like the fucking downfall. But before that was an angry fucking preacher kid who was talking about.
Did you see him perform live?
I never got to see him perform live. Oh. I wish I did. I mean, like, that was definitely one of the guys who, like, I wish I did. Bill Hicks, I did. And that was great. And I got to talk to him a couple times. So I always feel like, oh, that's so cool. Another guy who I did see perform live, Rodney Dangerfield, who is like another guy who, when you talk about like comics helping comics, this dude did more for comics than anybody. Rodney Dangerfield doesn't get enough credit.
He really did. I mean, like all those young comedian specials in the 80s that exposed us to who then would become the next generation of like, and even going into the 90s. You know, he's still, like Judd Apatow and Ray Romano and Janine and Kindler and, you know, all those guys. Like, it was fucking amazing.
Did you, do you know the show, not to keep promoting shows, but The Green Room?
I did it.
Yeah. So, see, that's the thing. Like, people always like, you know, what are comics like off stage? Is like, we're pathetic, you know, like pretty kind of sad, dullard people because, like, we have our own sick sense of humor, but. Whatever you see on that show is kind of like what it's like, which is like, you know, there's definitely like much respect due to certain people who led the charge. And like for the rest of us, you know, it's like it's kind of cool to be hanging out. Like I did an episode with Doug Stanhope, who I think is the funniest, truest comic in America.
Yeah,
has he been on here?
We haven't had Doug on yet. I would love to have Doug on.
He's the real deal. Like if I fucking had balls, it would be him. Because nothing's off limits, nothing's off base. And he does not care. He does bar shows. He fucking does not hold back. And his the beauty of him is that, like, you know, people love watching me bomb, you know, because I do it my own way. But, like, he never really bombs because he's fucking, like, it's like self-destruction, like a beautiful mushroom cloud. I mean, it's like, he's my favorite comic, so.
I think I did a show with him in San Francisco at the Punchline, I don't know, maybe like 5 or 6 years ago. And he had precariously balanced on a stool. Like because people kept giving him drinks, so he had a beer and then a tequila shot and then like a wine glass or a flute of champagne or something, and they all looked like they were gonna fall off in any minute. So part of the set was just like it's gonna go down, and he got through the set and downed every one of them.
He likes to drink and do stand up. That's like his favorite thing. Yeah.
You know, but there's definitely like pure evil, you know, funny incarnate, and I think he's that guy, but. Thanks, man. Thanks for the compliment. I mean, comedy is so different now than when I started. I mean, it's just like so much more promoting yourself. And like, you know, you hear guys talk more about like Twitter and all that kind of stuff than about writing jokes. So it's kind of sad, but I guess that's the world we live in, right?
Well, yeah, because the comedy club business
is a great time for a commercial right there.
No, because the comedy club business is kind of struggling. Like,
yeah, right?
as you know, when... I mean, it is expensive to go to a comedy club, and when the economy goes down, it's like people don't have an extra $100 to spend a night out at a comedy club, and so it's hard, you know?
But, yeah, I get that, but I do think that, like, you know, when you're at that age of, like, 18 to 30, that, like, you got to go out and do something because you need adventure, and, like, going to a comedy club and, like, hearing, like, something just raw and live instead of, like, you know, a drip or a fucking clip on a whatever... And doing that kind of stuff, it's like, you know, that's an experience. And people misjudge for, like, watching it on the net for an experience. And it's like, you know, whether it's comedy or, like, let's say bum fighting. Remember, that was popular.
Sure.
You know, it's like you got to live it to, like, you know, fucking do it. And I feel for the younger comics, man, because I don't know what what the answer is for this kind of thing. I guess they want to be famous. So.
Do you feel like it's more important to be honest in your comedy or funny? I mean, like,
funny, because
the guys that you mentioned, Stanhope and Louis, are like guys, or guys like Maron.
Well, that's why they're great comics. Oh, yeah, Mark Maron is another
guy. They just say, like, they manage to translate real shit that they're going through into comedy, and I'm not as good at that. I just try to write silliness.
Well, that's the point now. It's like, I think that people want to hear your inner thoughts or whatever, but people are forgetting that, like, you know, your job is to be funny. And, like, I would say I do that job 60-40. Like, you know, I got jokes I know that I can work, but I'm always working on a new joke. So, you know, like, when these kids come down and they're like, what's this all about? Why did he switch from talking about the president to now lubricant?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, because I'm trying out another joke, all right? I'm making $8 to be here. And I want to get something out of the experience, too. It's called new material, all right? So, but I think that whatever you do, whether it's spoken word or whatever. If it's a comedy club, it should be funny or as funny as you can make it. And I don't think you should pull back until the audience tells you to. You know, like when the audience groans and stuff like that, that means that you're almost that you're in the right spot.
Oh shit! I never thought of that before. I always just kind of get frustrated with the groan.
Yeah, no, it's frustrating.
Yeah,
it's frustrating.
Or the when people go, you say something that's even slightly challenging, and then they go, "Ooh," you're like, "Really?
They've been
you
taught
think
to say that?"
Yeah,
they've been taught to think that. You're right. Go ahead, finish. The
no, no, there. That was it. That was it. Because I just don't know. You know, as. Because especially if you're saying something that's not really that challenging and people have that reaction, you're like, you didn't even listen to what I was saying. Yeah. And then you realize like, oh yeah, when people sitting in the audience, they don't hear every word you're saying. It's like they hear the hook of songs. They don't know all the time you spent writing the verses. So yeah. you can't blame them for that.
I agree with you on that. And the groaning thing and all that kind of stuff, it's like, if groans were like magical and like they could fix all the problems, like, you know, you could groan a tsunami away or you could groan starving kids' bellies full, then it would be worthwhile. Otherwise, like for the comic, it just ramps it up, man. It's the red curtain. The red carpet. You know, you just want to fucking, you know, power through that.
So then do you think any reaction that you can get out of people is good because you're sort of, you know, you're affecting them in some way? Or do you still feel like... No. You have to craft all that, and ultimately the laugh is the thing that we're after.
I don't know. I did a show one time, and a guy was taken out of the room for, like, I think he had, like, a mini heart attack. So I think that, I wish I knew what joke that was, so I know I'd have, like, a kill joke in me. You know, like, Dune, like, this is the kill word.
That's the kill joke coming up.
That's the old Python sketch, the killer joke.
Don't make me do the kill joke. Yeah.
All right, guys, there's a lot of hecklers tonight. I don't want to fucking start murdering people with the joke.
You know, I use that as my, whatchamacallit, neutron bomb, just to clear the room, but... I don't know, man. I don't know without having a wrench to keep this microphone from...
the studio's falling apart.
What community college are we doing this at, by the way?
E-Community College.
E-Community College. We get to 12 Kardashian points.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, how long have you been doing comedy now?
I guess, well, I first did it in 91, but then it wasn't until 98 that I started doing it full-time. So, no, 13 years.
See, but you were already a great performer from being on TV. Right?
Well, I don't know if that... I don't think I was. I think I was just a little less fearful.
Right.
You know, like, I was a little less fearful, but when I look back at those times, I was terrible. Like, I was a horrible comic.
I think of that... yesterday, like about what I did yesterday. I mean, for some guys, they're always like, the first time I got on stage, I killed.
I never like a guy that says that.
Yeah,
I
but
feel weird.
I always respect their like cockiness because I never have. I'm like, oh my God, I cannot believe I just did that and that was horrible.
I know.
I
always feel like it's like, you know, you should look back at stuff you've done a few years ago and go and like, you know, maybe appreciate it, but just go, that's not good. I got to, you know, like if you haven't moved forward from it.
Yeah,
I think. That's
oh, absolutely.
Kinda, you know.
How often do you write? Do you sit down to write, or do you just kind of riff
take
on
the
stage?
Thoughts. I go on so much that I take the thoughts and I bring them on stage. But I do write jokes also. So like I, you know, do the pad and all that kind of stuff. But I think that until I hear how they're going with it, you know, you never know which way the joke's going to go. But if you said that you were performing from the 90s to whatever, then you kind of missed that whole like I started in the late 80s, and let me tell you, it's like there was so much bad comedy out there. You know, just like. Horrendously bad comedy. It's like people go like television sucks. It's like there's never been better television than there is now.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm not talking about like I'm talking about like, you know, whether you like Mad Men or Homeland or like, you know, just like a million really cool shows out there. And like, you know, same thing with comedy. It's like right now there's like, it's like a golden age of comedy. Like women are finally getting their due.
Mm-hmm.
There's just like comedy for everybody. And it's like really accessible to everybody too. The only problem is that like we live in this incredibly, you know, prissy, pussified, politically correct world where, like, you'll never know how good the joke can be because there's so many things you're not allowed to say or try or whatever. And, like, people get fucking shouted down and booed and groaned because it's just pushing the envelope just a little bit. It's like George Carlin, I mean, like, I wonder what he would think about, like, these people. Like, you know, let's say this word and that word. And it's not
weird.
Coming from the government. It's coming from, like, a company or, you know, whatever.
And the crazy thing is that what people need to understand is that there's a certain – I mean – you know, you have to kind of make the joke like, guys, this isn't a lecture. It's a comedy show.
Yeah.
And
like, you got to have some.
We have to, you know, like there has to be a certain amount of shock that we can use because that's where you get a lot of people is trying to find those turns. And sometimes it's hard, you know, it's hard and you get a little, you know, what you don't want to be is in your head on stage and scared.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And I think that the more that you push it, especially when you first, once you like learn how to write a joke, the better it'll be down the road for you, because like you realize like, oh, I know how they'll react if I say that, and I know how it's like like sense memory learning, you know, like just like, you know, if I say this word, I know someone's probably going to get up and throw a chair at me, you know, because like you've heard it, but you never really saw it until it happens to you. So,
and then ironically, that YouTube video was the thing that makes
that
you famous.
Yeah. But there is definitely a lot of like, you know, I want to be a comic, and then I really want to be this. But I'm a comic, so like I don't do any. I've done. My acting career can be summed up in like, who else was available? You know, oh, he can't do it? All right, we'll get this guy.
How often do you cycle through material?
Once I put it on tape or on a DVD or something like that, I try and do a whole, like, start again, like a new hour, you know? But now I'm old, like, I can't do it the way I used to. It's like, I'm sitting on an hour now, like, to hopefully bang that out at some point. But I have to tell you, like, you know, when... The first hour you do is probably going to be the best stuff you have, but you're at your worst game. And then, like, later on, you're like, oh, man, what was I sweating that shit out for? I wish I had that material back, because I could totally, like, run with it for hours. Like, just the one joke I did, you know, I could just run with that. Now it's like, you know, it's performance and writing. They always try and catch up. I mean, this isn't James Lipton's show, is it?
No, kind of.
You know what's really interesting, though, and I think we'll all agree on this, like, you never really get into the process of like any other type of entertainment besides comedy, like let's say clowning.
Sure.
Like, do you really care? Like,
is that
what
a
they
sex
do?
Move?
Yes, yeah, a yeah. Clowning. It's in the planking family.
Yeah, that's where you paint your balls red, mm-hmm. And then you
break a pinata over.
That's
your,
right.
Yeah, break something. Them. But, yeah, like, nobody cares about, like, hypnotism. Like, how do these people get this amazing
I'm
skill?
Sure if there's a hypnotist out there with a podcast, he fucking cares.
Well, he would be telling us
I can't stop listening to the Hypnocast.
But, you know, like, people, you know, like, how to, you know, whatever, like, everybody who's, like, magicians. Like, I knew as a child, like, I never knew as a child that I wanted to be a comic. I tried a million other things and nothing worked. But, like, magicians, that's something that's, like, a calling, like, when you're eight.
But people don't really want to. And the president an astronaut.
Yeah, there's five callings. And
because I think people dissect comedy so much because there is something inherently very scientific about it, but... there is a mystery behind it, because ultimately, you know, just like you said, you never know till you get out there and try it. You don't know.
You don't know.
You don't know because you can't predict. We can approximate and go, well, if this worked, this will probably work. Jokes that I laugh too hard at that I'm writing, though, and always die, always fail, because they're too inside.
Because they're in your head. Yeah, that's true. And the more that you try and tweak the joke, the more you get away from the actual thing that was funny about it.
Yeah.
That's the saddest part.
That's the worst.
Oh, I hate that.
They start to slip away, like we're trying to figure out what made it funny in the first place.
Yeah, like even like the point of this podcast, like it was originally about porn, and now here we're talking about comedy.
We'll get back to porn. Yeah.
No, we're like working our way through, you know, like the, I guess, touch football is up next.
It's like a mall. Yeah, it's like a mall. We're going to go down, and it's going to be about Foot Locker.
Hey, the fact that you're writing jokes and like trying them, and especially in L.A., I think this is like one of the hardest places to start doing comedy. Is LA?
Oh, I agree. Yeah, LA. Yeah. LA is hard, but you know we have a nice little space at a comic book shop.
Yeah. What is that place?
Meltdown. It's just a great little space where people actually come and appreciate things, and I think it's just sort of part of the nerd culture is that they're not afraid to express happiness or joy or for things that they like. There's never a sense of where you feel like people are in the audience going, well, I see what he did there, you know, like where they're trying to outthink your jokes.
The crowd seem to be there just to, you know, enjoy entertainment. They're not there to kind of like get in on the scene or they're, you know, some of them maybe like wanting to do comedy, but everyone that's there seems to just be genuinely excited about whoever comes
on
stage.
It's nice.
Yeah, like,
it's a really nice
and like last
vibe.
Night during
can I come by?
Yes, of course you can.
I'd love to.
During Wednesday.
This Wednesday?
Yeah, any Wednesday.
Well, I don't know. I got to
got a lot of stuff going on. Yeah.
I'd love to, because you know what? Like being on the road, like I get to do like a lot of time. But like when I'm in New York, like, I could do like these 10-15 minute sets. And those used to be like the greatest times for like, you know, you're sick of your road material and you get to like, you know, it's like, I just want to say like, you know, fucking like, you know, the weirdest shit and just to clear like enema, like self-enema in your head. So if you got a room like that where you can just like go up there with crazy
you
stuff,
can.
That's
excellent. It's fun. That's, you know.
See, in LA, I always thought it was like, you know, like, that's why I love like the Comedy Store, because like that's bare bones in there, you know, right?
Yeah. The Comedy Store, I always think to myself, you know what? I'm going to go just perform regularly at the Comedy Store, because then if you can survive there, then it's pretty much like that's a fucking obstacle course.
All the regulars there are broken guys, though. They're all cool.
But then I remember that, like,
it's definitely the Fisherman's Wharf of comedy. waiting for a ship.
Yeah. And then, like, it's like if you don't go there too regularly and you show up to do a set, they're all very thrown off by that. Like, what are you doing here? I just like go up and do some comedy.
Really?
You're not going to do well.
Ah, sorry. Don't even try.
You don't know these people.
Whistling out the black toilets here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they're all wearing leather jackets.
I'd always wondered about if Insomniac, which was a fucking awesome show, and still to this day people are like, oh, we want to do an Insomniac type of show.
Do it.
They,
I think it's been done a million times. I mean, like, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just curious because, you know, on that show, you're hanging out with people, and then people watch the show, and they get familiar with you wearing a television, then everyone thinks they're your buddy. Did you find that when you were performing after that, that people were shouting shit back at you on stage like trying to, you know?
Yeah, there was a lot of drinking, and I did a lot of drinking, and I shat a lot of blood. And, you know, I would say that the cool thing about that show was that, like, it was kind of really the deal of like, going to a town, doing the show, blah, 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 going around. And, like, you know, the offbeat towns. And the people who watch that show, I guess, when they come up to me and they go, I used to watch that in, like, grade school and stuff like that. I know it's been off the air for a couple of years, but it's not like, you know, it's not like Lucy.
Right.
I mean, you know, but it was like a cult hit, and it was cool. But, yeah, it was hard to perform. Like, anybody who, like, has a show on TV and then performs and takes anything outside of that range of what people have seen on TV, it fucking spooks the crowd like a popsicle in the asshole of a fucking choir boy. It's just like, whoa, he never said that on the show. But, like, you know, you're always thinking, like, the crowd's really going to love it because now I don't get a chance to hold back. And they're like, hold back, please. I brought my wife here. You know, my daughter just graduated college, and we thought it would be a fun time for all of us.
We thought we'd go see the drunk from television.
Yeah,
talk
they're
on
like,
stage.
This guy.
Who knew?
But now, you know, I think that there's so many reality. Like, have you done your reality show yet? Because you probably
no
get your chance.
No, God, no. I don't want to do a reality show.
I'm in.
See? There you go. That's what we'll just call just it. I'm in.
Yeah. I don't want to do a reality show. I mean, if I do a reality show, that means things have gone horribly wrong.
There's only one real true reality show, and that's the poker. You know, like when the...
Or C-SPAN.
And C-SPAN. They both have the same energy and intensity.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you really do feel like how God watches us. It's like incredibly boring with moments.
Even C-SPAN's cluttered up with corporate dollars.
Well, years ago, I went to visit, when I was working at MTV, a friend of mine was producing one of the Real Worlds, and I happened to be in Miami, was the Miami cast. And
oh, good
cast. He was like, swing by.
Good cast.
And so you go by the house, and then you see the control room, and there's just nothing going. Like, well, a person answered a phone. I mean, they're just shooting for months and months just to craft these fake storylines.
Yeah, that's why eventually they just started boozing them up. Every year on Real World now, they're like, just put a bunch of booze in the house, then we'll see what happens.
Do they still do that? Like, is that show still going?
Yeah. Still a show. Then it turned into pretty much like, no, they still have it, but now there's Jersey Shore, which is
in its
essence is like I think that's the truest reality show you can get.
You think
just
so?
Because it's like those people are just fucking crazy, and they film them, and they're excited to be on camera, so they act even crazier, and the results of that are all real, you know.
Yeah,
God form, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, they say there's no more heroes, but there are.
There are.
You know, the cool thing about these other reality shows, which is like the Dirty Jobs and all those kind of different things, is that, like, you know, people love looking at like a job they never would want to do. You know, it's like, today we're going to give you the ins and outs of like a laundromat. It's like you really, you know, we've all done laundry. Can you imagine working there? But somehow it's fascinating at like 4 a.m. when there's nothing else.
Yeah. You just, that was the pitch right there. You just highlighted the pitch. We've all done laundry. I wonder what this is like. That's exactly what that pitch was.
I'm really good at it.
Now, see, I would totally do like a Dirty Jobs kind of show because that's not reality. It's just non-scripted. Like reality is like, everyone's acting like fucking asshats.
Yeah, there's anything on A&E or Bravo or anything.
If you're
channels.
A real housewife of any type or a Kardashian.
Scripted reality.
That's their lives, though. I mean, like, you know, you can't fault them for wanting to, like, be famous. You know, and that's, like, I think for the younger kids, they all want to be famous. So, because that's the only, like, thing that they see really pays off. Like, being smart, not really.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Being, you know, being, like, courteous. And, like, you know, understanding, you know, it's like being an astronaut, like, nobody gives a shit, right?
I
the shuttle,
do.
I know, but that was so funny when the last shuttle landed. It was like totally like, and that's the end of space. Now
it's closed. There's just a big sign in space that just says closed.
Yeah, sorry, last guy in that station that no one gave a shit about because you never did any interesting experiments to us.
What'd you guys find about space? It just keeps going, so we're pretty much done.
Like, unless we use robots, we're never going to get out of the backyard. Let's talk about that. Alternative fuels. Now, if they took like a real world house of people, let's say, and move them to like a Chernobyl or a Fukushima, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
Kept them there for 6 months until their mutant powers awaken, because we all have them.
Yep.
A mutant power awakens, and then have them go out to fight a crime or solve a, what? No?
I think they should, and they should cast supervillains to fight. That would be really amazing. And then you would actually see an actual real world versus road rules, but with people trying to make each other's eyes bleed with the power of their mind.
I like that. Or like the 16 and pregnant, you stick them there in the nuclear wasteland and see the spawn that would come out. Some lizard king. I don't know, guys. Some of this is best just done after you huff a rag or something.
Most of them
isn't everything.
So what's the deal with pot in this town? I don't smoke pot, but I understand it's like a huge...
I don't either. I don't know. Our friend Doug Benson seems to enjoy it a lot.
He's a big fan. Pot dude. His documentary on pot, I thought, was really good.
Super Jaime?
Yeah.
It's fucking great.
That was good.
He's
a good dude, man, and he's a great joke writer, too.
Yeah, he's a great joke writer.
Doug is a phenomenal joke writer, just a king of super funny, quick,
bullet in
the chamber kind of jokes, and I'm not good at those kind of jokes.
Really?
Every time I say B of A, I end up saying B of A, be very of A.
Is that Doug's joke?
That's a Doug Benson joke.
God damn it, that's funny. I don't know how many times you ever said this, but I saw this at the Improv once.
The Melrose Improv. We got to give them their due. That's a great club.
That's my favorite club in the city.
That is good.
I have not been there in quite a while because I'm usually out of town on the weekends. How is it still?
I like it. I remember there was a few years ago I was on a show and then you showed up to do a set.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
You showed up to do a set and then I was kind of in my head like right before my set and I was at the bar and you came in and you're like, how's the crowd in there? I was like, they seem okay. They probably just need to be warmed up a bit. They just, if I just go out there and have fun, it'll probably be okay. And you're like, who the fuck are you, Bud Freeman? And then you walked away.
I like how you gave the crowd an out. They probably had a hard day, and I don't know. Maybe I remind them of somebody from their past.
I think the woman in the third row had a miscarriage or something. She just didn't look comfortable.
I always like how...
Discounted beer, please.
There's always that one table in the comedy club where they're having, an amazing time and you're just getting away of it. It's like some dude with two escorts, he's like Estonian super hotties. He just hit the Powerball number and he's just there. They're eating clams. They're like talking to each other. One of them's giving him like a hand job with her foot. And you're like, okay, so let's talk about flying.
Yeah.
You know?
And then they always jump
plane,
back.
So whatever. Yeah. But there's always that one table. You're like, I wish I was that dude right now. It's like you look out, you see your dream in the audience.
I don't remember what the setup was, but you said something about you arrived at the fact that Eskimos are just snow Mexicans.
Yes, and that's a contentious joke.
That is a contentious joke.
Yeah, snow Mexicans, and then Tom Rose, who also is another great joke writer, has a similar thing, but I never heard him do it, so I think that's a contentious thing.
Really?
Yes, and I feel if I stepped on any of Tom's stuff, I watch the call, but that's, I'm known for that, the snow Mexican joke.
Where do you fall on the, that guy did that thing, so I shouldn't do this thing?
I try never to do any joke that anyone's ever done. And if I, like recently I was performing with Jim Gaffigan at a benefit, and we both had the same Subway bit, and I didn't see him do it, so I did mine, which is totally Sid Caesar, who is this old guy? We just heard that. So I was like, dude, you know what? I just started working on that 6 months ago. It's your thing, man. I'm not doing it anymore, But I can, of course, do a different sandwich place.
Sure.
Right?
There's other ones.
You talk your way back into the joke.
There's some other ones. What are there, Togos?
Togo. There you go.
Ownership over sandwiches?
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing. It's no one owns the premise, but it's when the joke is pretty much dead on. I've had a lot of my stuff jacked, and part of it is hey, some guy's doing your joke, and then part of me is all right, well, he's doing the joke, but he doesn't do it like me. And then I'm like, oh, well, but he sounds just like me. Okay, well, then I better start writing more jokes.
Yeah.
It's because you can never, whatever. With
that's
James.
A I think that's a better, because otherwise you would fucking make yourself crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think probably what happens sometimes is that some people are in clubs and they're kind of half paying attention to the show and something gets into their head and they don't know. And, you know, because there's so many weird things sometimes where you're like, that is a very specific bit, but I really don't think that person was even on the same coast as that other comic. Sometimes shit just gets into the ether.
Yeah, if it's topical, it's really easy to come up with the same joke. But when it's like, you know, a chunk of material that sounds exactly bang, 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 then you're like, wow, either they heard that on like a Let Me Do It, or like, I'm talking about like any comic, you know, they heard it on the whatever, or saw it on the web or something like that. That sucks. That sucks when you're like, wow, that was like a huge chunk of my material, you know? So, but what can you do, right?
Nothing.
Nothing at all. Well, you can just drink it out of your system.
Or get mad or just punch yourself in the balls.
It's really up to your puppet to settle things sometimes. Then that's when you wish, puppet fight. I wish I had a puppet.
I have a puppet porn.
You do?
Yeah, it's from, I think it's from maybe 1979, 1980. It's called Let My Puppets Come.
Mm-hmm.
And Al Goldstein's in it.
Oh.
And almost everyone is puppet.
I never get the rights for that.
Almost everyone's a puppet, and it's a comedy, but it's a lot of like wacky jokes. Like a nurse comes in. There's a puppet guy in a hospital bed, and this puppet nurse comes in, and she blows him, and she's got one of those, you know, just one of those kind of flat, open, hinged puppet mouths, and she's they're making the noise, and then he. All this stuff shoots out of his puppet cum shoots out of him, and then she leaves, and he goes, "That was the head nurse." Like, it's a lot of silly jokes like that.
Yeah.
Let My Puppets Come, if you can find it.
So that would be in the more very young adult section.
That's yeah, like exactly. Next to Twilight,
a tweener. Yeah,
yeah, next to a Twilight, if you will. Or
have you guys had any of the Twilight kids on your show yet?
No.
Yet.
Yet.
No, I mean, don't you think your fan base? Do you think your fans would really like that, or
I don't know
like,
if there's a lot of Twilight crossover with our fans.
There might be a little bit.
There's a lot of younger fans on that listen to this thing.
Well, I'm glad we talked about porn for hours.
Oh well, they love it. They love
it. They know. Okay. There's an explicit tag on this fucking thing.
Well, what do you think is the movie of your fan base? Like, what's the movie they love?
Back to the Future.
Really?
They love Back to the Future. They would love. They love Ghostbusters. They love. I think they love. Let's see, something a little more contemporary.
But 1985 is not contemporary enough.
No, you know, like,
you know, maybe like Tropic Thunder or you know, the
Black Dynamite.
They probably like Apatow. Movies.
Don't they like really like hardcore?
Oh, and Dancer in the Dark.
Like that movie Moon. Did they like that?
Moon is great.
Oh, how come that didn't come?
The Sam Rockwell. Sam Rockwell will be.
I didn't think it was that good, but I thought it was okay.
I didn't see it.
I want to see more about it.
Yeah, David Bowie's son directed that one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he doesn't use Bowie.
No, he uses some other name.
Good man.
He uses David. I'll bring half the money to the table.
Yeah.
He doesn't need the fucking last name.
He uses Iman. He uses Iman.
Yeah. David Stardust. It was really weird.
What about like TV shows like Battlestar Galactica?
Battlestar. They like Battlestar. I think they probably...
Doctor Who.
They love Doctor Who. Like a lot of people love Doctor Who. They probably watch... Yeah, they probably watch your Dexters and your
Lost,
your Mad Men. They probably watch
them.
Lost. Probably your Modern Family. I would imagine.
Community 30 Rock.
Yeah, that's in the sweet spot.
We've never tried to describe what our fans like to anyone. This is interesting to me.
Because I feel like we just talk about what we like, and the people who listen to the show are people that we would probably hang out with. And they probably like a lot of the same stuff.
See, well, like for me, like, you know, being a nerdist in my own way, like I thought that would be like hardcore sci-fi, like just like
definitely
know,
a component of that.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I mean, like that's like one of those movies where like at the end there's like, you know, just did you ever see this movie Phase 4 about ants taking over the world?
Oh, was that
but
around the same time where they did?
They're not like gigantic.
Not like
ants.
Empire of the Ants where they became
like,
big.
Yeah, it was like this movie fascinated me as a youth because it was like these ants are taking over the world. They've all like, you know, I think it had something to do with like a metaphor for illegal aliens. Because ants are the hardest working of all the insects, correct?
They're very organized.
Some of them are brown. Yes, come on. See, I knew you guys would pull back.
Some of them are black.
Oh, no, I was physically pulling back, but I was laughing.
See? See how hard it is?
My last name is Rodriguez, so you're upsetting me.
Yeah, they do. And,
oh, I'm so kind of sorry.
They love Walking Dead. They love zombie movies. They love... I mean, I don't know how. I'm sure.
I like Walking Dead. I think that's pretty good.
Good.
I'm sure there's a lot of like people who watch Zardoz that you know, Zardoz. That Sean Connery. It's a weird.
What about Falling Skies? What did you think of that, guys?
Didn't really watch Falling Skies either. No, and someone said Falling Skies was pretty good, but I didn't. But I ended up not watching it.
I don't know.
There's I don't watch enough new stuff.
There's too much fucking
my own fault
television for me to watch all of it.
Well, what about the next sci-fi like show? Because I figured you guys would like. Do you remember the show called UFO?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Like somebody should redo that show. Like somebody out there, one of the fans.
Well, they redid V, which was
Pretty good. That girl in it is in the Homeland.
Is in Homeland.
Super hot. Yeah, yep. She's great.
Yep, Marina Bakarin.
She is just great.
Marina Bakarin.
I don't even know. She looks great as an alien. As a
she was in Firefly, the Joss Whedon space western show.
How much should we do Alien Nation? Just so people will get your reference, John.
Oh, Alien Nation was great.
I got to stop making that reference.
Alien Nation?
Every time I bring it up in that joke, it's like two crowds that I would think would get it. They never get the Alien Nation reference.
I think that one might have slipped through the cracks for some people.
Yeah.
But it's a fucking great movie. James Caan's great in that. Manny Patinkin.
Yeah.
Love it.
Now, what do you think about Star Trek? Do you think they'll ever make another movie or not?
They are making another movie.
Oh. Really?
Yep. They're making a sequel to the reboot.
And there are rumors that Seth MacFarlane wants to relaunch the television portion of Star Trek.
Really?
Yeah.
He's already doing the Flintstones?
Yeah.
Or the Jetsons?
As
the
live action?
He's already doing
animation?
The Flintstones as live action.
Dana Gould was talking to somebody about doing
the Jetsons. Great joke, right?
The Jetsons.
He's a great
joke phenomenal writer. Joke, right?
But he was like, he was talking about how they wanted him to pitch for the Jetsons, and he had all these ideas of just making it like the reason they're all high up in the sky is because of the apocalyptic wasteland below, and that's why they're all up there, because the humans fucked up everything, and he wanted the, you know, what's that guy to do it? He just had like all these great ideas of how dark it would be.
That was like a short pitch.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Who was someone
we're looking for an airplane kind of PG-13. I saw 13. No, I like this. I like The Road. Like, did you read that book?
No.
You should read the book, because the book is better than the movie, but the movie is pretty good. If you're a white man.
I am.
We all are.
White man, that's a white man. Like,
we're all pretty fucking
Breaking
white.
Breaking Bad is another white man. White like, man. You know, like.
Sons of Anarchy, very white.
Very white. That's a little too white.
That's
for
a little
me.
Too white.
That's
yeah.
a little, you know, put the hood away.
Yeah, yeah,
white.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that Breaking Bad is like dead on. That's like.
I'm looking forward to Hell on Wheels.
Yeah, I didn't see that yet. That's cool.
I don't think it's come out. It hasn't come out yet. There's been a hole in my soul since Deadwood kind of fucked me sideways by not ending.
Mm. Yeah.
And so I need another contemporary Western.
That was the worst not ending ever. Do you remember? They got the two posses
worst.
Together, like, you know, there's going to be a war in the town. And then, like, oh, no, we're going to go do John of Cincinnati for.
But it
was
great. John of Cincinnati was.
Really?
I don't know. I didn't see it.
I did see one episode of John of Cincinnati, and then I think I was like, Schwa? And
we're having
you love surfers that are also Jesus, or you
yeah,
don't.
Or you just don't.
Well,
you
all
just
surfers
don't
think they're Jesus.
Yeah, if
true.
You're a messiah. Surfer,
oh, God, yeah, that was the plot of that shit.
Yeah, that was a cool, like, because you'd have to have a successful show on the air to get that on the air.
Yeah.
You'd have to be like, what's your next idea? All right, surfers who are Jesus. Something.
Okay, done. No, sorry. No.
Whatever.
No, it's not going to happen. I have a hit show already. Oh, all right. Yes. Do whatever you want.
See, like, I've never seen a whole episode of Survivor. Or what was the island show?
Lost.
Lost, yeah.
I thought Survivor was the reenactment live version.
Well, that's kind of going back to what Chris was saying about the other way around.
It was the other way around. They always do the reality version. They're like, hey, this is kind of a, like, I'm actually...
Half-Life.
Half-Life?
Back to Half-Life.
Do you play video games? Do you play video games at all?
I wish I... I'm playing, like, still... whatchamacallit, Commander and Generals.
Uh-huh.
Remember that one?
No.
From, like, the 90s. Like, oh, you're still fighting the Russians in that one?
Oh, Command and Conquer? Was
yeah,
it Command and Conquer?
Yeah. It's some weird... You know, I can only imagine...
Still fighting communists.
Yeah, it was some weird, you know...
Before,
the wall has to come
before
down,
the wall
fellers.
Came down. Well, the wall's down now. Shit, well, let's shoot zombies.
No, I know you guys must have like the ultimate hookup with games here. Like, what's the Halo? No, is that Halo, over?
Well,
the music's good.
Let's see what's coming out. Well, Battlefield 3, Arkham City,
Call of Duty: Modern Warfare is coming out very soon. Modern Warfare 3 is coming out like next week or something, right?
I don't know.
I do next week.
And what's the premise of that game there?
It's Call of Duty, but it's a modern sort of the world is at war. Kind of thing, like London is destroyed, Boston is destroyed, and it's, you know, modern weapons, and you go do something.
Yeah, you have tasks, missions.
Who are you fighting in that one?
You're fighting, I believe, a generic terrorist threat.
Oh, that's cool. Well,
and then you can get zombie packs in a lot of games, like Red Dead Redemption. You can get
that's
the zombie pack, and you run around the old west and shoot zombies
and
everything.
I'm waiting for the Madden zombie pack, where you can fucking play
the
zombie
was,
stealers
was
or something.
Still love Portal 2. I think it's my favorite, one of my favorite, not just games, things of all time, Portal 2.
Mm-hmm. Arkham City was so good, though.
Wow. You're excited for the debut. Would you camp out for it like an iPhone?
No.
Yeah. That's weird. I saw that in New York people. I'm like, what is this taking back the Wall Street?
That's funny.
I'm trying to get a new iPhone.
Well, the funny thing about it is that if you order it online, they'll deliver it to your home the day it comes out.
The other funny thing is that weekend it came out, Saturday, we were in New York, and I just was in, I'm walking down Lexington Avenue. I saw an AT&T store. I walked in and said, hey, you guys got the new iPhone? And they go, yeah.
That's the genius of the Apple spell.
You didn't have to wear a thermal suit or anything.
I literally, it was an afterthought. I just happened to be walking by. I even did a double take because no one was in the store, and I came back and I looked at the guy and I walked in.
I enjoy when people bring me things, and so I just had it delivered to my home, which required no outdoor
but even
time.
Still, if you missed the delivery window on that, like the you know, 20-hour window of being able to get it that day, the wait was like, it's now up to like a 30-day wait if you're to order it.
What are those people going to do? That's the worst thing that's ever happened to a person.
I'm supposed to use my four?
Yeah. Jesus Christ. Day four, I'd be chewing off my own leg. I don't know why. I'm not attached to anything, but I'd just be freaking out.
Is there an app that can tell you when they're ready that you can download?
I believe it probably is, actually.
Yeah, the Apple Store app probably does.
Like a big countdown, you know. That would be
your phone's ready.
I like the app of the compass, like where you can download a compass just in case that you know there's no power or anything. So you can use it.
Yeah, because you know everyone knows direction now by north, south, east, and west.
Yeah, latitude and longitude.
I never really figured north, south, east, west out until I got to LA, just because it's so geographically.
It really sucks here with that driving.
It's just like geographically, you know, that's the ocean. That's away from the ocean. That's the hills, and then that's
how I grew up.
That's like, Disneyland.
That's how I grew up in Hawaii. Like it's like cool. That way the ocean, that way the
You grew up in Hawaii.
Yeah, I was born and raised there.
Wow, that's neat. What was the deal? What was that about?
My parents fucked, and then I.
Were you in the military or something?
No. My dad was from there.
Did he run a pineapple plantation? I'm gonna go through every stereotype.
Did
he? Was he the outrigger canoe tester guy?
He did. He did paddle. He did. He was
a little paddling.
Yeah. He actually his team won the Molokai race. They had the title for like 20 years.
So you grew up during what, the 80s?
Yeah.
So was Magnum P.I. shooting in the island?
Yeah, actually, like my dad was in an episode of Magnum P.I.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Cool. There was a baseball match at the end, and
baseball match,
a baseball game. But it was like high stakes, and then Magnum tries to steal home, and then my dad's was the catcher, and so it's like the slow mo scene.
That's
of
fucking
my dad
awesome.
Tearing off his mask.
Yeah,
my dad. Every time the ball was hit, he would tear off the catcher's mask. Just because he wanted to get his face on there.
That's really funny.
Yeah. So I come from a long line.
So they were hitting a bamboo stick and a coconut, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's got to be great though, because I bet you the island is just crawling with extras from that Hawaii 5-0, the original. Now the new one, Lost.
Yeah,
right,
Lost. There was a ton of people. Yeah.
So
there
must be like all these like. And it's
Jurassic
like
Park.
New Zealand, like waiting to be a hobbit. You know, come on.
Well, that was what's kind of cool about the original Hawaii 5-0 is that they how many just local people they use, local actors, and that's what kind of makes that show.
Well, it's a lot easier than they were hiring people and bringing them in.
They were going to call it broken English.
Pigeon. Yeah.
There's a lot of watch out, McGarrett.
Yeah.
Behind you.
I have a slightly Japanese. There's a Pacific Rim. I just know that my words are very stilted.
I'm wearing a dark suit. It's 80 degrees out. Yeah.
I'm not a sedum.
I watched a couple episodes of the new Hawaii 5-0, and they brought in just Polynesian looking actors from the mainland to be in it, and it's just like they're trying to speak pidgin. And it just doesn't sound good. And like, there's one guy's like, I didn't know you spoke bird. Like, no one fucking calls it bird. They call it pigeon.
Oh, they do.
Everywhere
now.
Calls it pigeon.
You've been gone for too long.
Well, the girl from Battlestar Galactica is in that, the hot Asian girl.
Not Trisha Helfer. I can't remember her name.
You should get her on the show.
All right, I'm going to get her on the show. Mm. Yeah.
Where did you nerd dream?
Where did you grow up? Where did you grow up?
Another island called Long Island.
What?
Yeah. We didn't have any fancy, but we basically didn't speak English there. It was all groaning and moaning, bitching and moaning. But yeah, I'm from East Coast, so that's why I always find people from Hawaii who are, not in the military or whatever. Just like, what's it like there? I mean, Dog the Bounty Hunter gives it kind of a weird slant.
That's actually the closest it's ever come to being. Like, it's like, that's the best portrayal of Hawaii is Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Really
just a fucking bunch of places that look like slums. Near the ocean. That's all it really is.
Eddie Kamehameha, are you home?
Yeah. The first episode I watched, there was like, they're like, it's like, our assailant is a guy named Jonah, And the last name was Ramos, but he's a Jonah Ramos. And I was like, oh, fuck, that's weird.
And then you just hear a knock on the door.
Yeah, like, his dog. I've said, never done meth.
When Dog the Bounty Hunter holds up a picture and says, this guy looks dangerous, he always means black.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not helping
his cause.
That's
my observation about Dog the Bounty Hunter.
That is not helping him out at all.
Listen, brother. I've been where you've been.
Go with Price, bro.
I like when he talks him down.
Go with Price, bro. About God.
I've been where you've been.
I'm coming tonight. Is it a dangerous tie? What? Is it black tie? I just my words were black. Is it dangerous tie, man?
Right now, you're just trying to sell oregano with the rat poison on it. But it's going to be meth. It's going to be catching him before it's even a crime. It's like, hey, where are you going?
I'm a precog now.
Precog crime. It's a precog crime.
But I find every time someone says they grew up in or around New York City, I that blows my mind. I was like, how's that work?
I was going to say, we're pushy dicks.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's not bad. I mean, like, there's a lot of clubs on Long Island, or there used to be. Governors is like the big club, Seinfeld, and Pips, which no longer is around. That was a big club, but Hawaii never has any comedy clubs. That's
John Lovitz tried to start one.
Yeah, it's impossible.
Yeah, yeah, it just doesn't work because the people that live there don't care about comedy.
They don't care.
They don't care about comedy outside of racial comedy.
Oh, the group. I thought it was just like their group of friends. They're like surfer culture. So it's like what they find hilarious is like, you know.
But it's all like all the comedy there, like the comedians that are big in Hawaii are all like, you know, it's all just like, you know, oh, what did the Filipino guy say to the Portuguese guy? It's all stuff like that. Yeah.
I can understand that.
And so, what did he say?
Well, hey, we're both from different cultures. Why can't we come together to find common ground? What, guys?
Boo!
Please.
But like, you know, Gaffigan went there and he said it was fine. But like, you know.
Didn't Sinbad shoot that special there? Yeah.
What?
But didn't Sinbad shoot that special there?
No, that was in the
Does that
Bahamas
make me geographically
like
racist?
Yeah. Do you start on the Big Island or do you like work your way down the chain like as a comic? Do you first start out? What's the littlest island?
The Big Island Japan? Would be the country. So you work out in the country. Yeah.
You got to be more proud of your state. I mean, come on, the president's from there.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. I went to school near where he went. I know that whole area he grew up in.
Is there anything on Lanai?
any clubs on Lanai?
Yeah.
Nah, there's just a couple hotels.
So leper colony?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you hear
that's
that?
That's Molokai.
All that refuse from the tsunami.
It's coming.
Yeah, I know.
In 3 to 5 years, dude.
Yeah, I know.
3 to 5!
That night, that fucking...
Do we have time for the sandwich? I don't know. It's 3 to 5 years. Go ahead.
What are we going
to
do?
I love time jokes more than anything. I love anything that involves math, like in a joke.
Really?
Yeah.
What are the jokes? What are the math jokes?
My joke was the flying to Australia. You get there the day before, you call yourself and go, don't come. And everybody did like versions of that. But I definitely know that was like, I did that joke. And then when I worked at SNL, they're like, Lorne Michaels likes that joke because he had like a different like version of that joke himself. I'm like, I don't know, this guy did comedy, you know. But
forget
I was
about
like,
that.
Yeah, I was like, you know, but I love any kind of joke like where it's like time zones and like just time. Shit.
Yeah.
No.
Yep.
No.
I mean, you know, I know you guys love a good racial Portuguese panel war joke.
That's a winner.
How long did you work on SNL?
How long did I work there?
Yeah.
They had me on the payroll for a year, but I'd say I actually worked there maybe 6 weeks.
Really?
I gave up.
You just didn't submit anything?
No, you always had to submit, but they never made any of my stuff, and I didn't really know how to write sketches. Like, you guys are probably all, like, great sketch writers.
No, I'm not a good... Jonah is. Jonah
is. There's always that point to the... Like,
he, Jonah is. I'm not a good sketch writer. But sketches...
I didn't start off.
It's hard writing sketches.
Endings are the worst. Ending a sketch is the worst.
That's our job, man.
Dave Anthony, I read one of his sketches once.
He's another funny dude.
Yeah, he's a really funny dude. But one of his sketches, it was just like, it ended with the guy turning to the camera. It was all, you ever realize how hard it is to end a sketch? You really don't know how to do it. You need an explosion or something like that.
Well, that's what, you know, what Python said, like, why their sketches always bled into one another. Like, because endings are really hard.
So
that's why they would just sort of...
And yet that turned into brilliance.
Brilliant. Like, well, yeah, but they would spin, you know, like, not ending a sketch and stopping it, but spinning off a tangent into another sketch
Even SNL, they fucking... They fade out their sketches. They go, what? And then it kind of pulls back and they just pantomime talking. You know? There's no fucking solid
end. The music comes up. Yeah, the music saves it.
That's what makes, you know, commercial parodies like some of the best sketches because it's fucking, it's just the tight fucking package.
Yeah.
And it's a parody thing. It's just easy.
But think about it. That's like 30 seconds of like just like images in someone's head with a message.
Yeah.
But like when they drag out those sketches, like 6, 12, whatever minutes, that's like death, man.
But that's what was so good also about Chappelle's show is that he got rid of any setup that needed to be done in a sketch. It was the best idea for a sketch. It was just like, hey, we'll just have a really charming stand-up, talk about the premise, and then we made a video. And then so you like you skip the front part of the sketch where you're like doing all the fucking
best parts of both.
You know,
No, that is definitely, I'd say, one of the top sketches ever made was the Chappelle Show.
Yeah,
oh, I think easily, it's great.
Bill Brennan, who also does comedy, I give him a lot of credit for like finding the look.
Yeah, yeah.
Like just Chappelle is just, he's another guy who I believe is a great comic.
Neil,
yeah,
like,
you
know, or Chappelle. Really
do. He's like just inherently great at what he does, and like you know, I watched him like from when he was 15 to like when he became famous, whatever. And like as a comic, he was really, really always like focused and centered in what he like wanted to do. I'm talking about on stage, you know, like just like amazing, you know. So when people go like, you know, what makes like a great comic? It's like this guy at 15 was better than me at 35, and I was like, this guy's just like, you know.
I remember seeing an old special with it was like a news show or something, and they profiled Chappelle in like 97 or 98, and it was like, you know, he'd just walk out into an open space in a park or something and just start doing jokes, and then a crowd would come around.
I heard that about Todd Glass too. I heard Todd would just like pull his truck up somewhere in Philly and then like to start doing
I've
comedy.
Never heard Todd say that. That's
William Stevenson was like one of the original like street performer guys with Charles Barnett, who's like a legend, you know, like in the New York scene especially, but he was like up for SNL with Eddie Murphy
at oh wow
and oh shit
it went with Eddie Murphy instead, and you could see why.
Hey, he did all right.
The rest is blah blah blah
blah blah blah. So anything else as we kind of
I know, I feel like I've like it's like a bad Amtrak trip. Like,
no, not at all.
Who wants to listen to the old man with the old stories?
No, are you kidding?
We do.
Listen, the only reason I feel like I've been holding back a little bit because I don't want to, because in my head I keep going, oh, poor Tal's probably told these stories, you know, a million times on shows before. But there, you know, there's so many things that I want to know about, like you know, the clubs you started in and who you started with and when you kind of started to feel those things on stage start to come together and when everything made sense to you. I want to know all that stuff, but I
smell a to be continued.
And then on
I smell a after podcast that I held
Insomniac,
in someone's basement.
In Vegas, yeah. He went to the pawn shop that is now Pawn Stars.
That's right.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's right. And I like to feel that I, you know, whatever.
I think you did.
Those guys
get
are
a
like
chunk of that
because I would always leave the bit going like, man, that could be its own show. It's like that's everybody's so exhausted. It's like 4 a.m. Like what? Like no, I'm just saying. You know.
You also, when you were in Hawaii, you did. You didn't.
That was one of our hardest shows. But
I bet.
A good show.
But like you did it. You went and drank at the Hideaway.
Yeah, that's a great bar.
That's a great. It's the best bar. With it's like a punk rock bar in Hawaii.
That is a great bar.
And it's like in between these buildings. It's a really weird little spot.
We lucked out with that bar because they had the crazy shots. You remember?
Yeah.
They have like crazy shots.
I used to have to sneak in there with a fake ID.
Oh, well, growing up there. Yeah, right? But did any of that Magnum P.I. magic work? You know, it's like, I know Rick and T.C.
You should.
Because Rick owned a restaurant there. The guy played Rick.
Yeah.
Your dad should just bring a catcher's mask with him and take it off whenever he goes
in anywhere.
Hey,
it's Magnum's catcher.
Hey.
Put this fucking guy in.
Hey, it's the guy that tagged out Magnum.
Oh, we hate him.
And then you got to mime hitting a ball so your dad can pull the mask off. So they're like, oh, I see it.
I know who it is.
I'm older, so when Magnum P.I., like Tom Selleck, was our kind of like, Jason Statman.
Who's the
Statham.
Are you trying to say that he's my?
Yeah, I always like insulting the younger generation. He's like our Rick. Like he was like to your Rick Reynolds or your
Ryan Reynolds.
I don't even know anybody.
Yeah,
he's like your Shia LaBeouf.
Oh yeah, okay, no, I get it.
You don't really.
By the way, he's a great actor. That kid,
Ryan Reynolds.
No, Shia LaBeouf. I think he's great because the Transformer movie, that was a money drop. Let's face it. Everybody wants to own like a mansion. But in Wall Street Never Sleeps, that I thought he did really good in that. He was intense.
Money Never Sleeps.
Money's whatever. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm an old man.
Can be honest though, Wall Street never sleeps either. Yeah. Dave.
Well, I slept a little during the movie. It was a little preachy.
Now that they're occupying it, they sleep a lot, like 8-9 hours a day.
Do you really think you're old? You're not old.
Yeah,
you're 46 years old.
God.
That's not old.
Well, all my comic friends are dead. But, you know, I mean, like, honestly, Mitch Hedberg, Geraldo, you know, recently, like, they're all, you know, like, you know, you don't, you know, whatever.
But those are unnatural causes, though.
Well, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, it's just sad to lose all those guys that you started with because they know all the, you know, they were so much fun and like so cool. And you like now you like you never feel like you're doing them justice, like talking about them, like because you never can say enough. Then people are like, oh, he's just saying that. But it's like truly, honestly, like in my to me, they are always be like legendary. Like
I just hope that people don't take away that, you know, that young comics don't take away that the thing that made them great was the addictions that they had. You know what I mean? Like because they are right. They're sort of.
That's what made them really fun to hang out with. Yeah. They were great. They were great.
And they would have been great comics.
It held them back from
fun.
Being great. But they were all. They all went too soon. But that's the point. It's like, you know. It's like either you're, you know, either you're, you know, both feet in, or you got to like, you know, hang out and watch the party. I guess I don't know what to tell you.
I mean, I think
now I'm getting sad.
No, I know it's sad. I mean, I think I said this maybe when Tom Wilson came on that. As much damage as Sam Kinison did to himself, it was a fucking car accident.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
The ironic death. Weird.
That he probably should have died 1,000 times from the amount of drugs
honestly,
in his system.
I know, right?
How did you steer clear of
well, Jesus. Big glass of pineapple juice from Hawaii.
Surfer Jesus?
No, yeah, Surfer Jesus. I don't know. Kickboxing is my new heroin.
Kickboxing.
I like to get up really early as a trainer comes to my house. And we both just stare at each other. I like these trainers that like show up people's houses at 4 a.m. You know, I'm going to work you out for 2 hours. This is weird. On your way out, like, please don't look like a male prostitute.
Yeah.
Don't worry, other people puts up are a hood up. And kind of creeps out.
The guy next to you is just going to his regular job. Yeah. There's some guy wearing, you know, sweatpants with a weird stain just on his chest. You know, it's like, we were working out.
I pay my trainer and crumpled
up
pills.
Is that weird? Because I feel like I am one of the least homophobic people in the world.
Which
and
makes
yet,
you the most homophobic person.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. Sit on my lap.
No, I'm not afraid of that.
Go ahead.
And yet, if I'm with a dude and like, as I do have a trainer, and if we like we go to get smoothies or something afterwards, there's a little part of me that's like, I wonder if they think if we're together. Like, it doesn't bother me if they do, but the fact that I even think about it.
If you're not homophobic, like, you'll let me put a dick in your ass, right? I mean,
wow. That's sad. I mean, you know, it's an airtight
I'm
case.
Just saying.
It's airtight.
What kind of questioning are you doing here? That would right for the balls.
It is an airtight.
But
it's
I like
an airtight
how smoothies.
Argument.
Is that a treat? Like, or
I don't know.
Have you ever had a smoothie? Oh, they're delicious.
They are.
Is it always your crunches? Or like sometimes it's like, you know, hey, let's just make some cookies and hang out and watch a movie.
Sometimes, yeah, it's just like apron pantsless, you know, just watching Sophie's Choice together, you know, on a couch on a Sunday afternoon.
Saturdays.
What is that problem?
Well, the weird thing is with the trainer when they go like, does your back hurt? And then they'll give you like some stretch for it. And it's always something like homoerotic.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, now just take your foot and the heel, like put it like just like have it like lick your asshole like a tongue.
The base of your chakra is under your balls. And so we're going to work
Thank
that
God
out.
For the shocker.
Listen, but you know what though? If results work.
Hey, right,
if
Peter,
results work.
Hey, you guys can't see it at home, but I'm
putting
a
t-shirt.
When you have your own hand thing, that's when you know you're headed towards evil. Thanks for having me, guys.
David Tell, thank you so much for coming on. It was a real pleasure. It's funny. I don't think we've ever really met.
No, we never have.
You know,
because I thought whatever, but then I remembered you from your show that you did.
Oh, yeah.
So there you go. I'm sure
that's
what
yes.
But we've never met, and you I've seen at the clubs.
Yeah.
So anytime you want, come by Meltdown. They do a great Wednesday night stand-up show. It's fun.
I'd love to
and
do
you,
it.
You were great.
I would definitely love to do it.
Awesome. Thanks, everyone. Enjoy your burrito, everybody.
Thanks, guys, for having me. That was
fun.
Great.
Yeah, it was a fun time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Nancy's love story could have been ripped right out of the pages of one of her own novels.
She was a romance mystery writer who happens to be married to a chef.
But this story didn't end with a happily ever after.
When I stepped into the kitchen, I could see that Chef Brophy was on the ground, and I heard somebody say, call 911.
As writers, we'd written our share of murder mysteries. So when suspicion turned to Dan's wife, Nancy, we weren't that surprised.
The first person they look at would be the spouse.
We understand that's usually the way they do it.
But we began to wonder, had Nancy gotten so wrapped up in her own novels?
There are murders in all of the books.
That she was playing them out in real life? You can listen to Happily Never After, Dan and Nancy, early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.